In our sizzling summer double issue, we bring you two articles on augmentation strategies and OCD, and one of them is on amantadine, a drug that is rarely used but often studied. And today we're going to tell you how to use it. Welcome to the Carlet Psychiatry Podcast, brought to you by the Carlet Psychiatry Report, keeping psychiatry honest since 2003.
I'm Chris Aiken, the editor-in-chief of the Carlet Psychiatry Report.
And I'm Kelly Newsom, a psychiatric NP student and a dedicated reader of every issue.
In our research updates this month, we talked about two augmentation strategies for OCD, and both of them were surprising to me. One is amantadine, a medication that we rarely use in psychiatry.
Have you ever used it?
I've used amantadine mostly in extreme treatment-resistant depression, because it has some mostly open-label studies there. And I've got to say it's one that I've seen success with in that population, and it's been reasonably well-tolerated.
Well, what are the problems to look out for with it?
The side effects to amantadine are pretty general, the kind of things you'd see with any medication. Headache, nausea, nightmares, insomnia. It is a bit activating. This is not a medicine that's going to make people tired, so they should be given it in the morning. Two side effects to look out for that would be in the more serious ones are edema, swelling. Because to me, that indicates that there could be something wrong going on in the heart, such as congestive heart failure. So I'd be careful with amantadine in the elderly or in people with CHF.
What are the other serious side effects?
The other one is livedo reticularis. This is basically purplish discoloration of the skin. Not something that you want to see happen. It generally goes away when the medication is stopped, and it's very rare with amantadine. It's probably something that can come on with chronic use. It's not something I've seen in my practice, but I have seen the edema problem. A couple other things with amantadine. It has slight anticholinergic properties, so particularly in the elderly or in people who are on a lot of anticholinergics, you'd want to watch out for that. Dry mouth, constipation, mental status change. There have been very rare cases of suicidality on it, and rarely there have been hallucinations, but that is something I've seen. People don't actually lose their minds or go psychotic on it, but they can have mild illusions, particularly at the higher doses.
Well, that's interesting. That makes me think, what type of category is this drug?
Amantadine has an interesting history. It was developed in the early 1960s for the influenza virus, but soon after, the flu virus developed resistance to it, and it's no longer recommended for that. Around 1969, they discovered that it treats dyskinesias associated with Parkinson's disease. And much later, I think just a few years ago, actually, it became FDA approved for that. That means that amantadine actually has two brand names, Simitrel, which was FDA approved for the flu, and more recently, Gocovri, which is an extended-release version of amantadine used in Parkinson's dyskinesias. The instant-release version is what's used in most psychiatric studies, and that's what I use. It's available generic, low-cost, easy to use.
So how does it work, then? What is the mechanism of action?
Amantadine does two key things in psychiatry. It is an antagonist at the NMDA receptor, which means it blocks glutamate, which is a neurochemical that can be toxic to the brain, and a lot of our novel therapies in psychiatry, including ketamine, work by blocking glutamate. So does lamotrigine. The other thing it does is increase dopamine release. So it has a slight dopaminergic effect, and that's why it's been studied, for example, in ADHD. It has a few other psychotropic properties, such as noradrenergic, like norepinephrine, and possibly has serotonergic effects, and like I mentioned, anticholinergic effects, which are not so desirable. But basically, we think that it works in the many conditions it treats through blocking glutamate, which is one of the reasons I think I've found it to be useful, is that we don't have a lot of medications that do that. Clearly, most of us have not been using esketamine yet, so there's not much out there. So I think when it comes to treatment-resistant cases, this offers a novel mechanism of action. There is one other, is memantine, also known as Namenda. The dementia medication works through a very similar medication, and in fact, a lot of the things that amantadine has been studied for, like most recently OCD, memantine has also been studied for. So these medications can be used somewhat interchangeably in psychiatric populations.
I did a literature review because I was curious of what it was used for. I found it was used a little more often with children. And here are the studies that it was positive for: ADHD, autism spectrum disorder, and fetal alcohol syndrome.
Yes, surprisingly, for such a novel medication, it does have a lot of studies in children. And these are, I want to emphasize to our listeners that just about every study we're talking about are small randomized controlled trials. So this is really something you'd want to reserve for treatment-resistant cases. And it does have controlled trials in those populations. For example, in a controlled trial of ADHD, it worked as well as methylphenidate and had fewer side effects than methylphenidate. In a few small trials with autism, it seemed to improve hyperactivity and inappropriate speech. But the place that amantadine has the most data in psychiatry is actually in traumatic brain injury. It's considered the best studied medication in TBI. So when you use amantadine in TBI, you're actually going with the first line treatment. But what it does in TBI is mainly help irritability and aggression. And there's been a handful of large controlled trials in that population. Most of them have been positive.
Well, does it help with brain repair?
Yes, it actually does. It has some neuroprotective properties. We don't know if that's how it treats irritability in TBI, but that could be part of the mechanism and is at least encouraging to know we're not giving something that's damaging the brain. Well, to wrap up, I'll go over a few other conditions it's been used for successfully in adults. In schizophrenia, amantadine improved verbal learning and visual motor coordination in two small controlled trials. It's also improved sexual dysfunction in small open label studies, but that's a bit shaky. In a controlled trial compared to bupropion in sexual dysfunction, amantadine actually didn't work as well as bupropion, which itself is not clearly that effective. So I wouldn't really suggest using amantadine in sexual dysfunction, but there's a handful of studies there, and at least we know it's not causing sexual dysfunction. It is, however, very useful in two side effects we see a lot in psychiatry.
What are those?
These are side effects to antipsychotics: weight gain and tardive dyskinesia. In fact, in a recent neurologic treatment guidelines, amantadine was considered the best studied off-label treatment for tardive dyskinesia after the on-label treatments, which are the two new FDA-approved therapies, Ingrezza and Austedo. It's not really a surprise that amantadine treats tardive dyskinesia, since it's FDA-approved for dyskinesias and Parkinson's disease, and that's something that's been studied since 1970, tardive dyskinesia, so we've known that for a long time.
Well, what about the weight gain?
Yes, in five randomized controlled trials, amantadine had a moderate effect on reducing weight gain with atypical antipsychotics. So I think it's very promising there, particularly as it may improve tardive dyskinesia and cognitive symptoms in people with schizophrenia as well.
So that's a lot of things it treats. Let's go over this once again.
One more wrap up. And again, these are things that amantadine probably treats. The trials are all preliminary: traumatic brain injury, irritability and aggression, hyperactivity and inappropriate speech in autism, cognition and verbal learning in schizophrenia, depression, ADHD, weight loss on antipsychotics, tardive dyskinesia, and possibly sexual side effects of SSRIs. Finally, it's been used for a lot of medical disorders where it improves fatigue. And in the substance abuse population, there's a small controlled trial where it helped withdrawal symptoms from methamphetamine.
Is there anything that it didn't work for?
Just one thing comes to mind in psychiatry, which is cocaine abuse. It was originally thought to treat cocaine abuse in the 1970s, and small pilot studies look good, but in the controlled trials, it really didn't make a difference there.
So, circling back to depression, how do we know that this medicine really treats depression?
We don't, and I think that's an area where amantadine is vastly understudied. It's sometimes said that amantadine has no controlled trials in depression, but the first study in depression was from 1971, and it was kind of a randomized controlled trial. They randomized 37 patients to three groups: Some got a placebo, some got amantadine 200 milligrams, and some got 100 milligrams. And in that very small study, which was actually reported as a letter to the editor, it had a statistically significant effect on depression. And then there was an open-label trial about 12 years ago for depression in the elderly. So that doesn't amount to much from a research point of view. I'm surprised that after over 40 years, there's only two studies in depression. But from what we know about its mechanism of action, it has some promise, but it's not something I would jump to unless the patient has tried all other alternatives that we have good data for.
So if we're going to use amantadine, how do we dose it?
The dosing is pretty straightforward. 100 milligrams is the only size it comes in. You take 100 milligrams a day in the morning for 7 days, and then 100 milligrams twice a day. I do it in the morning and at lunch because it can be activating. Some patients take all of that together at the same time. It's usually not a problem. You can go up to 300 milligrams would be the max dose, but I tend to see more side effects. Almost all the side effects tend to be dose dependent. And this is a medication that might have somewhat of a narrow therapeutic index. There have been reports of toxicity beyond 1,000 milligrams, so you'd want to be careful with the dosing. Most of the studies use between 100 and 200. A few go to 300. If you want to read more about amantadine and the other new augmentation strategies for OCD, you can find these articles on our website, thecarletreport.com, where we're offering a special discount to our podcast listeners with the code PODCAST, all uppercase. You can get $30 off your first year's subscription.
The subscription includes the print edition delivered to your mailbox and full access to all the articles on the website, monthly CME credits to maintain licensure, as well as an option for self-assessment credits towards your board certification.
The Carlet Report is one of few CME publications that's fully supported by our subscribers. That helps us stay free of commercial influence and bring you information you can trust.